Yeah. Okay. So, thank you for the chance to be here and to speak. I might be too long, so at some point you can, yeah. So the property I'm talking about, it's not actually manifestly related to integrability, but it's there where integrable structure are. So I think it's worth talking about. And the work on the subject was done in these papers, and one is in collaboration with Arkady, who's here. The framework is the large spin expansion of twist operators, and here just recall where twist operators emerge. They emerge in the analysis of deep inelastic scattering. So you can write down the hadronic tensor that contributes to the cross section of deep inelastic scattering. And in the deep inelastic scattering regime, the matrix elements that we have here as scale just for simplicity of indices can be expanded by an OP into this expansion. And twist operators are the one characterized by the spin that appear on the right side. And the twist two operators are most importantly because they govern the leading singular behavior of the coefficients appearing in the OP. So one important information about these twist operators is that if you analyze the large spin behavior of their anomalous dimension, you will see that they grow most logarithmically. And this is actually a feature of a lot of gauge theories, from QCD to n equal 4 super Emils. And indeed, these twist operators, here I'm talking about the twist operators, have representatives in n equal 4 super Emils, and also via the SCFT. And they can be dual to some semi-classical string configurations. And it's precisely the link between the objects here that is that can lead to some non-trivial observation about the spectrum of these objects. And here I just summarize what we know about the spectrum. I think what force of pyramids, this is, it's intentional that you can see because I don't mind right now. What I'm talking about is I want to have anomalous dimension on which to comment, not how to get them. Anyway, what we know is that in 2005, that was a proposal of a no-loop asymptotic data ansatz that could describe the asymptotic spectrum of n equal 4 super Emil theory. It's also called the ADS-CFT data equation because strings enter in a factor, which is here. You can see that, but it's a so-called dressing factor or a scalar factor because you can see these equations, the right side of this equation, the right-hand side is you can see that as an as matrix, which can be fixed by the global symmetry of n equal 4 super Emils, so PSU 2,2/4, but up to a factor. And that factor, in that factor, enter the information about string theory. So they are a powerful tool for the calculation of anomalous dimension because basically you have only to specify the quantum numbers of some operators. But then they fail. They fail when they have to describe short operators. It is the famous wrapping problem. And wrapping is something that comes into play when the range of the interaction starts to be at the same order of the length of the of your operator. And then it was established in 2007 that they do not give the correct anomalous dimension. And then it's a quite recent, achievement that this wrapping correction can be calculated somehow very roughly exploiting the quantum field theory of the dual worksheet theory on ADS5 cross S5 because you can calculate wrapping correction on that side by considering somehow wrapping around the cylinder of the theory. And then the most recent achievement is the unification of these two complementary descriptions in terms of the so-called Y system. These are, again, functional equations, Hirota equations, that give in the asymptotic limit, in the limit of large length of operators, give back data equations, and also can reproduce the result by generalized Lüscher corrections. And this is what I wanted to summarize about the tools of getting anomalous dimension. And you can see also there was quite long, maybe three weeks or 4 weeks about integrability. So there is a lot of stuff on the web.
So these things derived, or they sort of carbon gas emission.
Okay, so no, they are mostly guessed. I mean, the one loop, it's only at one loop that we have a complete proof of the integrability of integral four superior mills. This is an all-loop conjecture, but it's very strongly supported from something that I will talk now.
Well, it's in not one year. Why not to assume integrability? If you just assume integrability of the exact theory, then you follow a kind of standard route.
So PSU 2 comma 2.
Both on the string side and on the gauge side. Not the one loop, but two.
Yes,
one
yes, but for the full PSU 2.2/4, I think it's just one loop, right? If I'm not wrong. But yes, there is a lot of evidence also to five loops for SU 2 sectors and so on. But this is a conjecture.
The dressing factor was guessed, or is that now derived?
Gromov, Kazakov, and Vieira, they claim that they derived it. Yeah.
Well, that's not an input in their formalism, that's an output. They actually get the dressing factor coming out of their...
Do you think the question
I'm
is...
I'm not that familiar with what
they've done. No, me neither, I have to say. Yeah, I mostly work... Well, because I think they claim that it's an output. They derive it. I don't remember. No?
Yeah, they
reproduce it.
Been mentioned
in the abstract of their paper, it's written we reproduce the dressing factor. I don't know what. Yeah.
That was discussed already. So.
Okay. So, there is a remarkable outcome from this structure, especially for this particular quantity. We don't need to think about wrapping correction and so on. This is the Kasp anomaly. And it's a remarkable outcome because this quantity is a spectacular example of a quantity that smoothly interpolates between weak and strong coupling, in the sense that you can derive beta equations that describe the renormalization of twist two operators in the n equal four superior mills via the SL2 sector. So you know that they will reproduce this leading logarithmic behavior. And you write down the equation for them, and you solve them in a sort of a thermodynamical limit, which is the large spin limit. And you get an integral equation that you can solve at weak and a strong coupling. And the spectacular thing is that completely independent calculation agree with this result. So at weak coupling, there is an agreement with the same function that appears that governs the double infrared pore. That appears in a conjecture on four-point gluon amplitudes, and at strong coupling, it was seen via a calculation of the superstring partition function of a whirl surface ending on null lines on the boundary, and this was done by Robin and Seitel in 2007. So. This is an example of this is the leading behavior of the large spin expansion I want to comment on. So now comes the motivation of our work. We wanted to ask ourselves what happens if we go in this large spin expansion of this operator that were so meaningful and full of physics. What happens if you go beyond the leading order? We already know something now about the first sub-leading order because it's a very recent achievement. Freyhild and Zimmer wrote an equation for this constant here, an integral equation. And there is also a conjecture about a possible relation between these two quantities, so the so-called collinear anomalous dimension. And there is also a talk online about that. I think that Stefan was giving the talk here.
So
about
the whole asymptotic expansion at large S doesn't depend on wrapping? And so
yes, the idea of Stefan.
In principle, it's already contained in the asymptotic.
Yes, he has some. Yes, this quantity here does not depend on wrapping. This is for sure.
Even for operators of length two, I mean.
Yes. Yes, and about the relation between the quantities, I don't want to comment so much because it's not so clear. There is a conjecture about the difference of the quantities. Anyway, if we want to go on, we cannot do some limit of equation and so on. We really need to have closed formulas for anomalous dimension as function of the spin. And the most powerful tool to get closed formulas is, again, the beta equation. And the point is that these state equations are not solvable analytically. So what you do is numerics, but with an answer. So you match the number that you get from the state equation to some inspired answers. And inspiration comes from QCD somehow, because the most successful answers is the maximum transcendentality principle answers, so not proved, but for the calculation that up to now were done, somehow works. So it states that the statement is only for these two anomalous dimensions. The statement is that these are linear combination of harmonic sums of uniform transcendentality to n minus 1 if you are at n loops. So one loop, transcendentality 1, two loops, transcendentality 3. These are the harmonic sums that come into play in this conjecture. And so it is inspired somehow from some deep physics. But the point is that the two authors here, they saw it explicitly. They did an explicit field theoretical two-loop calculation on these two anomalous dimensions, n equal 4. And they saw they could obtain it by picking up the maximum transcendentality term of the QCD calculation. They saw this at two loop, and then what they did, they conjectured that the three loop result was going to be the same. So they extracted the most complicated terms of the QCD result of Mach, Fermat, and Epocht. And obviously, they had to put the Casimirs equal to some quantity, which is relevant also for n equal 4 super m mils. Okay, so this is the answers you use. We together with Matteo, we have generalized these answers in the sense that we have studied the anomalous dimension of twist three operators, and instead of having a combination of sums only for a combination of harmonic sums with the uniform transcendentality, we had something like structures of this kind. So the numerator harmonic sums, and then denominator some function of the spin like this, where the sum, however, gives the transcendentality. So there is some discussion about the fact that this is a breaking of the maximum transcendentality principle, and someone like Niklas or Stefan, they claim that that you can use some property of the harmonic function to still have it. But I was in my office with Kotikoff, we discussed, and I think this is okay. This is a breaking, but this is twist three. So maximum transcendentality principle is something which is useful to get closed formulas, but it's not confirmed by anything, only if you believe it. A second source of inspiration from QCD to get closed formulas, actually it's not to get them, but to check them, is the BFKL equation. So there is a relation that you can do in n equal 4 super m mils between this way of describing high energy scattering amplitudes in n equal 4 super m mils, BFKL, and the Altarelli-Parisi equation. So a relation between a relation that gives you some prediction for the poles that you get when you analytically continue an anomalous dimension to negative values of the spin. And this prediction, and this was the key to, so the agreement with this prediction was the key to establish the breakdown of the data equation and the disagreement, with this prediction, but was also the key to establish the correctness of the for loop result that was recently found by these two guys. Quite important result, because it's the first time that wrapping comes into play, and so this was what I talked before about the generalized Lüscher formula correction. So now, suppose we have now closed formulas, we can start to make some statements about the large spin expansion. So we do experiments, we take the very simple one, loop anomalous dimension, trivially given by this harmonic sum of transcendentality 1, and we expand it, and we don't notice anything in this expansion in S, but if we change the expansion parameter from S to this quantity here, we observe that we will only have even powers of C to the minus 1. If we do the same at two loops, it doesn't happen, so I have again all powers of C to the minus 1, but I notice some relation between odd powers of S minus 1, the coefficients of these of powers and other coefficients in the expansion. For example,
what's your motivation for that? I mean, it looks like something like a quadratic Casimir.
Exactly. So you are anticipating the answer. I'm just doing some cinema to make the attention. So, yes. So it's true. So odd powers of S minus 1 are not independent. These kind of experiments, you can do that with anomalous dimension of QCD twist operators up to three loops. The observation was done from the very same authors that you can write this relation between the coefficient of log S over S and the coefficient of the CASP anomaly. And it's a very non-trivial relation because all these quantities, the coefficients are coupling dependent. So if you know the CASP anomaly and you know that this relation is true, you can say immediately something about subleading terms. And so, yes, you can talk about a Casimir, even though now I don't really say about which group. So you can somehow explain the evidence that I showed you before, rephrasing the large S expansion in terms of another function, which is defined this way, again, via the anomalous dimension. This is, it's a non-linear relation, but it's just a change of variable. So the real evidence is that for this function, you can check a parity invariant series of this form. It's in large S expansion. So for the function defined this way from the anomalous dimension that you can derive inverting this relation, you will see a parity invariant series. In Mellin space, this relation can be translated for the Mellin transform of the F, like this relation. And this is from where reciprocity, the name of reciprocity comes. And the interesting QCD inspiration is that, in QCD, the proper reciprocity was formulated in 72 by Grigor and Lipatov, was seen up to one loop for the splitting function. Another statement that I do, and I will try to give some evidence later, is that if you want to explain those relations that we've seen before in the case of QCD, you will have to add to this relation an additional term proportional to the beta function. Now, this this claim here and the fact that you have to have a beta really suggests that you are that you can explain partially this evidence in two ways. So one way of interpreting this result is just a revisitation of the Parton evolution. But I anticipate that there is no explanation for this property. That's why it's maybe interesting just to know that it exists.
So is the variable X in which the reciprocity occurs, is that the Bjorken X of the...
Yes, yes, yes.
It's relating...
Okay, so it's some Mellin variable. In deep inelastic scattering, you call it a Bjorken variable. But there are in others, yeah.
It has the meaning of a momentum fraction carried by a parton.
Yes, in QCD, yes, yes, yes. So, but in N equal 4, obviously not. So, but one approach was just trying to interpret to give a new formulation of evolution equations. So, these are the standard Alcarelli-Parisi evolution equations for a parton distribution function or so-called fragmentation function, depending if you are describing a deep inelastic scattering or it's crossing related process E plus E minus annihilation. And this is the way you rewrite it in Mellin space, where gamma is simply a Mellin transform of the splitting function appearing here. Now, the idea of these guys was to reformulate an evolution in a way that treats symmetrically these two things. So here, sigma is space-like or time-like according, if you describe, this is space-like, if you describe a plus and minus annihilation is time-like. But these guys said, okay, you treat this symmetrically, so you have a unique function here. You don't call it anymore splitting function because it doesn't have that meaning. And you also change a variable here. There is some deep physics also in this proposal. But the main point is that if you now solve this in Mellin space, so if you rephrase this equation in Mellin space, the relation, this one will be the same, but this relation will be no longer a Mellin transform, but this nonlinear relation. So this choice is a success just to explain that change of variable, passing from gamma to this other function. And of course, if you now assume that for this new function, the relation of reciprocity is respected, then you will recover the result of QCD.
So I've lost track of what reciprocity, I never understood what reciprocity is. I mean, it relates x to 1 over x?
Yes, but it's everything here.
The usual x runs from 0 to 1.
Yes, of course.
So it actually is taking you outside the usual.
Yes. It's not only Gribov-Lipatov, but also Drellian relation, so it's going analytically continually.
Did you see that it's like a parity?
Yes, you can see that. It's like a parity invariance with respect to this quantity here, in the sense that it is not difficult to see. You just reformulate a Mellin transform, you change a variable, and you can see that this is exactly the same. Where, of course, n
it's
is a
parity in the space-time perspective.
No.
It's not space-time parity.
Just something which respect this symmetry. Okay, so
it's your space-like to time-like processes, right?
Yes, in QCD. Yeah. But, okay, now we take a different perspective. We talk about n equal 4 super EMLs, and we don't think about Mellin, Bjorken variables, and so on. So we don't think about this or a plus and minus n relationship. So these guys, of course, formulated this for QCD. There is a second interpretation, which now brings into play the Casimir, and it's that the operators of which we are analyzing the anomalous dimension can be classified according to representation of a subgroup of the full conformal group, which is the so-called collinear SL2R subgroup. The conformal invariance of n equal 4. States that you can make a study of this collinear or representation of this collinear subgroup. Basically, these fields are just projecting on the light cone, on a line, and then you have something like a Möbius transformation that relates your coordinate, and then you can classify the operators according to representation of the group. The main statement is that different multiplets cannot mix under renormalization. So every one of these operators is characterized by a value of the conformal spin. And what is the idea of these authors? That the conformal spin, which is something like an LZ in this SL2 group, the LZ eigenvalue, and is defined like the Lorentz spin plus the scaling dimension. So this quantity here, in the at higher orders, at higher loop orders, gets modified in the sense that this Lorentz spin is protected. The anomalous, the scaling dimension receives an anomalous contribution like this. So the conformal spin, which characterizes the operators and so their anomalous dimension, is modified in higher loops like this. So it starts from a bare value and it gets an anomalous dimension here. And the idea is that you can rephrase also this relation like the fact that the anomalous dimension itself depends on this conformal spin. And then you get again this relation. Okay, so these two interpretations just give an idea of trying to explain a part of the evidence, because the real evidence is this parity invariance, whatever you want to use to explain it. So you take these operators, and these operators may be built with scalars or with gluinos or even with gluons, and by gluon I mean a special projection of the field strength on the light cone. And then you take their anomalous expansion, you expand them at large S, you rephrase the expansion in terms of the F, and in terms of the Casimir of this group. And you will find disparity invariance. This is just what you find.
So in you can, n equals 4 only?
Yes, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And one, presumably at one loop in KCD, you also find it when it's also...
This is also so in QCD what you do is to take into account of the breaking of conformal symmetry by this quantity which is proportional to the beta function. So the statement is that this is an evidence of n equal 4 superior mills, but also of QCD. So it's not really related even to, you know, to planar limit, because in QCD you don't take the, it's not planar QCD. It's three loop anomalous dimension, and so no supersymmetry, no planar limit. And in n equal 4, it's true as well. We have seen it, so these guys have seen it for the twist two anomalous dimension in QCD, singlet, non-singlet, polarized, and unpolarized, and up to three loops in n equal 4 superior mills. We have also seen it for other twist operators, as I said, made with gluons, twist three. There is a note that I have to do that when you consider twists higher than three, so operators with three fields, then in general the anomalous dimension forms a band. So there is not only one anomalous, the anomalous dimension, there are various trajectories that scale with the spin, and reciprocity has been only checked for the minimal energy. And a last statement that I want to do is that we have analyzed also the four loop anomalous dimension for twist two, which is the most recent an important achievement. Actually, it's not the most recent, because if I get some time, I will show you another five loop result. So this anomalous dimension can be analyzed separately in the asymptotic contribution and in the wrapping contribution. And what happens is that they are separately reciprocity respecting. And because if you consider the anomalous dimension only given by the asymptotic beta equation, of course it's not true. So we have said that the beta equation breaks down exactly at this loop order. This means that reciprocity is there also where there is no physics, because the anomalous dimension that you get a for loop from the beta equation is wrong. So it's there is a further statement that it's there independently on the correctness of the result. So it's a built-in property of the beta equation. But you can also ask yourself, if you can see that at strong coupling, so you have to consider the energies of semi-classical string dual to the twist operators. And usually you do that by matching quantum numbers of the solution. And because the twist operators are only characterized by the spin, you will look for a solution which is a configuration in a DS3 typically. And this was done many years ago by Gapser, Klebanov, and Kolyapov. And it is the so-called folded string, a closed string folded on itself to form a segment line rotating in a DS. The leading behavior indeed is logarithmic. Of course, here the sensible quantities is this ratio here, and this is because in semi-classical string expansion, the classical energy, the classical spin, because of the square root of lambda in front of the action, everything is multiplied by square root of lambda. So this is also the semi-classical expansion. And to get the cusp anomaly, the large spin expansion, you have to require that the spin, the classical spin, is much greater than square root of lambda. So this curly S is somehow the one that has to go to infinity. So this leading logarithmic behavior was not expected, because, I mean, it was not clear at all why further logarithms should cancel, but it was observed also at one, at two loops recently, so it's a strong statement about the duality of this folded string and twist operators. You can study the folded string. So now we want to go beyond the cusp anomaly. So we just take the solution. The solution is given in terms of this ansatz. These ansatz solve the equation of motion, but has also to solve the conformal constraint. So the exact solution for the folded string is this one. At the classical level, we don't need this quite involved sigma dependent of course solution, but we just need the integral of motion, which are given in this parametric form. So this is the energy, this is spin. We want to analyze the behavior, the dependence of the energy on the spin when the spin enlarges. So we solve the spin in terms of eta, eta in terms of the spin we substitute, and we found something that resembles the structure that we found a weak coupling for twist operators. And also we found the reciprocity. So where the Casimir now is just the spin. So because we are only in ADS, we don't consider the twist. So the twist for us is zero. And if you remember the definition of the Casimir that I've done before, it was something like this. So at this point, so of course there is a difference when you go from strong coupling to weak coupling. So this, if this is 0 or 1 or 2 or 3 or 4, and on the string side you don't care about, because you have to consider that the sensible quantities are divided by square root of lambda. So you will talk about a Casimir here, somehow a semi-classical Casimir, which will be this plus j over square root of lambda. And this, if you're going to compare with the twist, so if this is zero in ADS, so this will be zero. So you will have a match. So your Casimir will only be the semi-classical spin. So this means just that.
So the statement of reciprocity here is just evenness in S.
Yes. In this case, yes. But you can also add this, and then you will have to consider another Casimir with a twist. If you add, if you are now rotating your folded string also on S1, you will have to consider also this Casimir, and again, reciprocity will be respected. You trust me, I didn't write you, but it's like this. The structure is apparently not similar because you get logarithm downstairs, but of course the correspondence between weak and strong coupling is not expected to be matching in coefficients completely. You know, should be somehow an interpolating function. In this case, it's clear that you should resum everything from weak to strong coupling, and this is something that it's only done in the case of the leading coefficient, the Cast anomaly. So when you cannot sum, you need to think that this is a simple problem of interpolation.
A stupid question. The fact that you cannot get square root of S even is trivial because it follows from Feynman diagrams. I think you're having even powers.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's not trivial.
I'm not even sure why you don't get square root of S. If it's only some more power. Because it would be something like J.
From Feynman diagrams.
Yeah, maybe there is something. Everything is proportional to Casimir, so.
When you sum up the Feynman diagrams and continue to strong coupling rules, square roots you can generate like that. It should be obvious from the string side. It must be a statement about invariance.
Yeah, well, Yeah, but it's not. We didn't find this trivial.
You should be able to explain string theory why you get even powers of.
There is another.
It's a symmetry explanation. It's related to conformal invariance in the gauge theory side.
Yes. Yes, but no. So I have to make it clear. No. It's very important that you make the difference between the conformal invariance if it explains only the fact that you change variable and you pass from this to this or the contrary. So the argument was only for this relation. But the reciprocity is something that you stated much stronger about the large spin S function of this F. This is just a...
Elasticity in S squared or something.
Yes, S squared or this Casimir, the semi-classical Casimir. So you change variable, and then for this S, for this F, you say something stronger, much stronger. So another classical configuration are spiky strings that are rigidly rotating. You get them by gluing together segments of arc. They have the same asymptotic logarithmic behavior, but this time you find the number of spikes in front. So this is clearly a configuration which has a higher energy for given spin. With respect to the folded string, this is higher energy configuration, of course. And so now what you find is also interesting. You find that the reciprocity is not respected here. But you find something nice also, which is that your large spin expansion, this is the equivalent of the anomalous dimension, can be somehow resummed in this form. Here, I already dropped the sublimity contribution at each order in 1 over S.
Sorry, you probably said, but on the gauge theory side, what's the status of reciprocity for higher twist operators beyond limits?
Exactly. I said that it's only confirmed for the lower boundary. So
this is an indication that...
Yes, this is a... Exactly. So this is not surprising. And this is actually a confirmation of the duality. So because this configuration should be dual to twist operators with twist higher than 2 that in that band that I was mentioning before are not in the lower state. Somehow,
the highest state.
Yeah, or close to the highest. In this paper, these three guys, they study anomalous dimension of twist operators that are supposed to be close to the upper. And they find the same, exactly the same behavior, no reciprocity, but the possibility of somehow taking into account of this change of variable. And you can check the reciprocity also at one loop, but this is more painful somehow. I sketch briefly. How much time do I have? I think I can do that in a few minutes. So in principle, the perturbative expansion on the gauge side and the string side are different. So the questions here, if the structure survives, if the reciprocity survives at, in string perturbation theory, it's not a rhetorical question. Because on the gauge theory, you first expand in a small lambda, taking the spin fix, and then extending the spin to infinity. And in string theory, your strong lambda, you send the lambda to infinity, and then you take this quantity fix, and then after this strong lambda expansion, large lambda expansion, you send this quantity to infinity. So the fact that these two limits commute is not trivial, and it was only proved for the CASP anomaly up to now. So the standard procedure for calculating leading loop correction in the case of the folded string, so it's just to, in the case of any classical solution, is to get to get a fluctuation Lagrange around that solution, and to get a two-dimensional effective action that typically is in the form of a functional determinants, and the one-loop energy will be this ratio here. When you switch to Euclidean, you will have to divide for the infinite period. So the form of the effective action will be something like this, functional determinant. The fact that the solution that we have chosen is stationary at least helps for the fact that these determinants are only one-dimensional. But there is the painful thing is just that the masses here are given in terms of a solution which is not easy, which is that elliptic sign that I shown before. So you can do perturbation theory, but there is a some bad thing that happens that when you expand, so we now want to expand for large spin. Large spin means small eta, because this is because the expression for the spin was something like an elliptic function for 1 over eta. So you send eta to 0, the spin will go to infinity. When you send eta to 0, the rho. The solution for the folded string, it's not behaving so well. So what we did in this calculation is just to somehow avoid the turning points where the solution is not behaving well, in the sense that it breaks the perturbative expansion. But we were good enough to parameterize to this lack of control with a contribution that we could somehow quantify. So we proceed with the calculation, avoiding these turning points of the folded string. We have two kind of contribution that are at the order zero contribution is just when you send eta to zero, the solution behaves in this case like a constant, so you have a classical formula for the energy of a constant mass relativistic fields on the cylinder. So this is fine and reproduces a well-known result. The order at a contribution is this one. And this is the final result. And as I said, we decided to put a constant here for precise reason, because we could quantify the fact that the turning point of the folded string would only contribute to this part here of the large spin expansion. So the large spin expansion at one loop is this one. At classical order was this one. And the point is that all these numbers are compatible with the reciprocity, because the reciprocity can be stated as a parity invariance, as a reciprocity in the Mellin space, or also can be stated as a relation between the coefficient in the large spin expansion. So this is verified, and this is, of course, a strong indication that it holds. And the last comment that I want to do is that, okay, we don't know how to explain it, but at some point, we can just assume it, because it's so large evidence, especially at weak coupling, that we can even think to use it as a guiding principle. And so we have done it. We have studied the example of the anomalous dimension for twist three operators at five loops. So five loops is a lot. There is also wrapping to be considered. And what you do is just to use two conjectures, maximum transcendentality principle and reciprocity respecting anomalous dimension. It is not a trivial task, because the harmonic sums involved in this calculation are of transcendentality 9. So the numbers that you get, even from beta equations, are huge. You should have a very high precision. That's why reciprocity was important, because at some point, so if you only use maximum transcendentality principle, you would have to determine deriving principle 256 terms that contribute to your anomalous dimension, which is a very challenging numerical problem. But using this basis, we wrote just the maximum transcendentality principle answers in terms of this reciprocity respecting basis, evaluate wrapping corrections, and then we got this result, which, so it's a conjecture, but we believe it's exact, because it has very nice features like the correct leading and subleading behavior are just a consistency check, because everything that we know about the class phenomenon, about the virtual function, is still got from the beta equation. This is got from the beta equation, only different procedures. So. But there is a nice check that if you analytically continue all these harmonic sums to minus 2, because all these harmonic sums are actually evaluated at S over 2, so the analog of the Pomeron for the twist 2 here is a pole at S minus 2, you will have an agreement with a conjecture that was formulated in 2007 by these guys. There is no BFKL interpretation for this. Twist 3 is something that it's not even, it is interesting because it's what comes beyond twist 2, but there is no so much physics about it.
Still, what people call the Oderon?
Sorry?
Isn't it the next excitation above the Pomeron, if you talk about the Oderon?
I don't know.
Corresponds to analytic continuation twist 3, I thought, but...
It could be. I don't know.
Yes, Jeff Hardy on Tuesday is talking about Pomeron phenomenon. Asking about the
Oderon. But this is the lowest, this is the operator of the lowest dimension of twist 3.
Yeah.
So are you saying that you expect the reciprocity to hold for the bottom of the band,
yes,
not the general
space
of the band?
Yes,
is that
yes,
it?
Yes.
Right,
yes. Even though the consequences of this reformulation, which is okay, something that I showed in the case of the spiky strings, can be still there. This is the only thing that you can somehow derive from a conformal symmetry argument. The other thing is not derived. So the conclusion of my contribution are this, that reciprocity is a very strong empirical evidence. It's all empirical because we don't know the meaning of it. And it's a built-in property of beta equation and also of the known example of wrapping correction. We can assume it as a guiding principle to get closed formulas for anomalous dimension. It is a strong evidence also at strong coupling, because we have seen it at one loop in string perturbation theory. And the last remark is that it's not strictly related to the planar limit of to supersymmetry, because you can see it in QCD anomalous dimension. And so personal outlooks are just to do that calculation we have done at one loop in string perturbation theory somehow more systematic, and then to see if there is a connection with something which is which go in the direction of amplitude or something else, in the sense that it's naturally questioned if we know, if you know that in the conjecture for the logarithm of the amplitude there is a strong. So this is exactly the cusp anomaly. So the leading behavior in the large spin expansion. Sorry. The single infrared pole we have seen, there is also a conjecture with the sub-leading behavior in the larger spin expansion. So we may, so what was the interest of this contribution is to say something, to give an evidence of a property for these other terms. And this what comes here. So I've done, so I don't have still the answer, but I'm working on it. I've done, I have asked this question to Lance Dixon, and he said that it's not trivial, just to, so it's, he doesn't expect that this, there is something which is related to a large spin expansion. So you should just change objects on where to study reciprocity beyond the anomalous dimension. And so I'm doing some experiments now with other quantities, and I hope it will work, or it will say something.
Hopefully I'll not take much of your time. So what I'm going to do, what I was planning to do, is just make some few very informal comments on the subject of how we're going from weak to strong coupling. So, so it's essentially it's a question about theoretical ADS safety, continuing what Valentina reviewed. So what do we know at the moment? And I just want to start with some general look at what we know and what we want to learn. And the basic question is how to relate weak coupling to strong coupling. And at weak coupling, we have conformal primary operators. We want to compute the dimensions of them, and dimensions depend on lambda and charges. And there's a huge degeneracy in dimension at lambda equals zero, and then it's lifted when we switch on lambda. And basically, what we get is some the deltas. We get some canonical dimension of the zero plus power series in lambda. So what do we know about these series? This is n equal infinity Young-Mills series. And according to Toft, this series at large n series should be convergent, have finite radius of convergence. So generically, that means some lambda equal whatever, 1/4, 1/8. In this cusp anomaly, I guess the This is something like that, the radius of convergence of the series. So the series is sign alternating. So we get signs like plus, minus, our finite radius of convergence. So compared to generic UCD, or generic finite end gauge theory, the series, similar series are supposed to be also sign alternating if we consider some good quantity defined, say.
So that's true even when you include all the spin dependence of the coefficients? I mean, for looking across ranges of operators, it's always sign alternating? How general a statement is that?
For fixed charges.
Once you fix the charges.
Yes, so if you fix the charges and they don't scale them with lambda in some weird way, as we just heard, at the moment I'm just on gauge side. So charges are fixed, lambda is varied from zero to some finite number, small lambda. So that's what we expect.
And delta is, you said, a particular the Kusnerus dimension, or?
It's dimension of some operator. Suppose we talk about some operator built out of, what we just heard, that was a dimensional operator which is built out of, say, two scalars and many covariant derivatives along null direction.
I mean, isn't this surprising? I thought nothing converged in quantum field theories. I mean, isn't this surprising?
According to Torf. So the logic behind that is, yeah.
Large end expansion is convergent.
So the intuition, yeah, in fact, it's
yes.
It's a good point. We're talking about gauge theory, and this large end limit is somehow it's very special. But it is indeed, it's a very good point that in generic quantum theory, that's what I was just about to say. If it's a QCD, we would expect similar sign alternating series, but it's not having finite radius of convergence. So at finite n, the series is supposed to be Borel summable, but infinite radius of convergence. So that would mean lambda coupling in terms of coupling the
zero radius convergence?
Zero. So generically, Borel summability, it's a vague subject, but like in QCD, we expect some non-perturbative corrections, which would go exponentially, say, in 1 over minus 1 over g squared, and attributed, say, to instantons. But just perturbative part of the series, by itself, that's what should apply. Sign alternating series, which is Borel summable. Now, what about string theory? So string theory is supposed to be some sigma model. So roughly, so bosonic, say, conformal gauge. In conformal gauge, what we get is some SO 2 comma 4 over SO whatever 1 5 1 1 4 times SO 6 over SO 5. So it's ON. It's easy to write down as just you have something like that plus constraint that y squared is minus 1 with signature minus minus plus 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 with some Lagrange multiplier, and similar, something like that. With Euclidean series. So that's bosonic sigma model. So if we look at this model, so this is O6 sigma model. So six sigma, O6 sigma, ON model. For n equals 6. Here there is nothing like planar limit, and this model is asymptotically free by itself, and it's characterized by some coupling, which is something which appears in front of this thing, which would be inverse of, which would be the inverse of the radius of the space. In our case, we canonically call this tension of the string. And plus there are fermions, which I not going to talk about at the moment. But that's roughly what kind of theory we are dealing with. So it's this kind of sigma model of compact, of sigma defined on compact surface plus non-compact surface. Time sits in non-compact part. Rest is. Anyway, so this is asymptotically free theory. This is non-asymptotically free theory. They combine together plus fermions make conformal free theory. At the end, nothing is running. Lambda is fixed. If we were doing some computation like, say, vacuum energy in this sigma model, we will be getting some series in 1 over square root of lambda. So effective coupling here, I don't know how to call it, G effective is 1 over square root of lambda. In this effective coupling, we'll be getting some G squared. Series expansion, and that series expansion is supposed to be of the similar type which we get in QCD. This is a kind of canonical example of asymptotically free theory. There is a dynamical mass scale which will be generated, and
purely in the bosonic.
Yeah, just purely in bosonic case. So there will be some mass, what is called mass gap or dynamical scale, which will be proportional to the cutoff, some power of G, and G effective, and 1 over G squared effective, something like that. Plus various 1 over G squared effective correction effect. So these coefficients are controlled by, maybe I should put some A and B, they are controlled by beta functions. So I think A is something like beta 1 over beta 0, something like that. Anyway, so if we rephrase them in terms of lambda, that will actually go as, if this is, as far as I remember, it's square root of lambda over 4. And this thing will go as lambda in power 1. It's half here and fourth here for the specific values of all six models. So once we switch on these quantum corrections in the sigma model, we get effective mass generated, and that's usually argued by taking SON model and taking enlarge and enlarge and limit. It's very easy to see in this parameterization that lambda develops expectation value, and that means we get six massive fields instead of five massless we started with. So anyway, so the vacuum energy in this theory, in one over n expansion, can be computed rather directly, and it will depend on the cutoff. If I call this mu the cutoff, there will be some function of this effective coupling, and then there will be something which will go as m squared, as you would expect in massive theory, this mass gap plus higher order powers of this mass gap, something like that, plus etc., with some coefficient in front. So the perturbative part will be just power series in the G effective, and here it will be kind of running coupling.
Pure 06 result?
Yes.
Shouldn't everything be RG invariant? Shouldn't it all be expressed purely in terms of the mass scale M?
So no, there is, in 06 model you have a cutoff.
Well, it depends. You're insisting on keeping the cutoff.
Yes, I want to keep the cutoff, yeah. So that's phrased as if we have explicit cutoff, and then we have perturbative part plus non-perturbative part, which will be dependent on mass, on this mass gap. Yes, we can normalize G effective to be at 1, and then we'll have this mass gap. Yeah, it depends how we arrange. So in principle, this splitting is kind of ambiguous.
Yeah. Well, once you take the continuum limit, you have to get something that depends on.
Yeah, it depends how we define it. Yeah, but maybe I'll get back to that. So what I'm trying to say is that this is generic quantum field theory. What do you expect about power series expansion in this theory? We have this mass gap generated, but generically we'll expect something which would be sine alternating series if we compute something like some observable in SL6 model. Plus, it will be expressed in terms of this dynamical mass gap generically. It will be naturally appearing there. And indeed, various observables which we can try to define in SL6 model. In fact, this vacuum energy can be computed by using thermodynamic beta ansatz. This is integrable theory, also quantum mechanically. And this quantity satisfies, this quantity actually defined as a function of this mass gap and charge number density, charge density, effective charge density. It satisfies certain TBA equation and can be computed. So why this story, how this story is related to what I've started with engaged theory? It basically raises the following question. So here we have finite radius of convergence. So usually what we say, strongly coupled gauge theory, it's kind of a known beast, and it's actually defined by string theory. The truth seems to be quite the opposite. So this quantity, having finite radius of convergence, give us some well-defined function of lambda, which we can then take to lambda infinity without any problem, and get some other function which will have some expansion in terms of 1 over square root of lambda. Or actually, there will be to put it generically, there will be some expansion like that. That's what we expect. And depends on what kind of operators, generically, gamma can be 1/4, in some special cases 1/2, if we have also big charges. And this kind of series, what do we know about what kind of series we should get here? From gauge theory side, the answer would be unambiguous. Well, we think it should be unambiguous. From string theory side, that will depend on what I just mentioned, that how we deal with this not converging series in
the lambda.
You mean this? Well, the reason why I mentioned that, there is indeed a suggestion that this may be relevant, what I just said. And that's what I want, that's essentially what I want to discuss. Indeed, nothing should run in string theory. There is no running couplings. But the question which may come up is whether these dynamics of very light modes, which are described by this SL6 model, actually can be relevant. So whether this effective mass gap can be relevant in this story. So I'm gradually getting to the point of what I'm trying to say. So, but at the moment, let me just summarize what I was saying by raising the following question: what kind of behavior we expect on gauge side of this perturbative series for, say, anomalous dimensions? And on string side, how they should be related? One, obviously, they should be related smoothly, we expect. There's no phase, no transition in any value of lambda, so there should be smooth relation when we go from weak coupling to strong coupling. But then, what kind of behavior on strong coupling we should expect? Should we expect maybe some non-perturbative corrections like these ones? And if they do appear, what's their origin, etc.
Is there an essential singularity? I mean, is there an essential singularity there? I mean,
it's not necessarily. Yeah. So we expect there shouldn't be any singularity, but
should not be.
Should not be.
Well, I mean, as a function of whatever lambda, that's an essential singularity. Why don't you expect
that? We don't see this from here.
No. But I mean, it's analytic at the origin.
Yes. Yes. Right. Expansion at large lambda, yes, maybe pretty singular. Yeah, that's exactly the point. Yeah.
Well, one thing that's very confusing here is the fact that, I mean, lambda is a marginal coupling. And when you have a marginal coupling like you do, let's say in the n equals 4 theory itself, and you go to very weak coupling, you expect any non-conservative effects you find to have some clear semi-classical origin. For example, you know, you'd expect to find instantons, but not funny fractional instantons like those associated with the generation of the mass gap. So it's very hard to see how what scope there is.
Okay, in all six model, this is lambda. Which runs? Okay, it runs. It runs, but maybe it's not directly related to what it's saying. This mass gap does not have semi-classical explanation.
Right, but that's because the theory is strongly coupled in the infrared. So
yes, but it does have explanation in SO3 case, maybe, because there you have instantons. But not in ON model bigger than n bigger than 3.
It's some strong coupling effect. You don't associate it with whole instantons. It doesn't have any semi-classical.
You understand it at large n, but you don't really understand the physics behind it for any finite n.
That's right.
All I was saying about instantons is that in SO3 model, you could expect that since it's a sphere, you can have wrappings of a sphere.
Yeah.
But then these embeddings of these instantons in O6 model would be unstable. And you wouldn't attribute anything to these instantons since they are unstable. There were some attempts, but I don't think there's nothing definite.
In the summer case, there's not going to be any dynamical mass on the Borelli, as you say, because it's completely invariant. All of the energies are set by just the size of the circle. So it's some function of lambda times whatever that radius. But now, I mean, here on this side, there's no planar protection. That function of lambda seems like it's your typical field theory object where it has an asymptotic expansion. And, you know, the SI expansion has an intrinsic maximum accuracy, which is the order usually e to the 1 over the coupling.
Yes. So, having done with philosophy, so this was purely general remarks. So let's summarize what we actually know. And what we know, and here I will be going back to the story which Valentina was discussing. We actually know this function, remarkably enough. We know one example when the whole series delta of lambda, in delta of lambda, say at weak coupling or at strong coupling, is known order by order in expansion. So we know coefficients. Say if you ask about coefficient of 110th term here, you actually can compute it easily. Now, solving certain equation, at least with a computer, you can do that. You don't know what the sum is explicitly, but it's known how to compute coefficients. And that's this case of cusp anomaly. So this is the function which was just discussed, f of lambda. And it does go, so let me just remind you what's the meaning of that function. So it's one particular anomalous dimension. So if we have the operator, which was, again, just discussed, so let me phrase it as, say, two scalars and many covariant derivatives. And we take S very large, and then we can see the anomalous dimension. So canonical dimension will be just S plus 2. So we will take this out of our total dimension and divide by log S. And that's F of lambda. So it's just a particular anomalous dimension of that particular operator. So this f of lambda goes as I think it may be useful to write down how does it go in terms of certain notation. So if I introduce g, which is square root of lambda over 4 pi, then, so again, this is something like G Young Mills, square root of n, probably over 4 pi. So that would be 4g squared, and then p squared over 3g squared. Well, some numbers, it's really the, I don't want. So what we see here is, what we should see here is sine of alternating series with coefficients which are going like zeta 2. So all these are coefficients of zeta functions. So zeta 2, the first one, then there will be zeta 4 or zeta 2 squared. And then there will be zeta 6 or zeta 2 cubed plus zeta 3. So that's this transcendentality principle that if you sum up the labels of these zetas, you get the same order as the power g. And then you compute, if you ask about 20th term, you can write down any combination of these zetas to that order, splitting them in products. And what is called PAS equation by the Tiedemann-Staudacher, which is derived out of asymptotic Bethe-Andres equations. It's essentially an equation for this function, but not exactly that function, but function of two variables, but its boundary condition is this function. So this BES equation essentially determines this f of lambda, and solving it to any finite order in G, you find any term in this expansion. And the claim is that f of lambda for any coupling, it's less than for g squared, for g small or large, for any. And there's a finite rate of conversion. Now, taking this BS equation, we can solve it at strong coupling. And that was done by Basso, Kaczynski, and Katansky about 2 years ago, less. So from this BS equation, they found strong coupling expansion on that same function. And what they managed to get is essentially an algorithm for any, again, similar series, but in inverse square root of lambda. And again, you can compute any order in expansion. And that's how this series goes. So it starts with, in terms of that same g,
it's 2g,
1 minus some c 1 over g. So over g means 1 over square root of lambda, then c2 over g squared, c3 over g cubed, etc. Now, what is c1? C1 is some 3 log 2. Proportional up to pi is.
C2 is what's called Catalan constant.
Well, that's the same as beta 2, where beta n is n log of zeta function. It's sum over minus 1 k over 2 n plus 1, I think, yeah? N plus 1 k k from 0 to infinity. So zeta is just 1 over n expansion, and this is similar series. So this Catalan is just some numbers, 0.9 or something like that. So this is the C2. C3 is zeta 3. It's k times log 2 plus zeta 3, some numbers. So if I write it beta 2, and if you ignore this log 2 or count it as something which is like beta 1, some reason. Then again, there is some analog of transcendentality principle. 3 plus 1 plus 2 is 3. And then at each order, what you'll be getting is, let's say, Cn order, you'll be getting some numbers of betas, some numbers of zetas, such that the indices sum up to the order. So that follows from their solution. So that follows from asymptotic beta ansatz, which was mentioned by Valentina. The wrapping interactions are not relevant here, and this is what we get. So what, staring at this expression, what should you be surprised by? These signs, they're all minus. Despite what we were discussing before, that we generically expect in quantum field theory, unless we expand the unstable vacuum, we expect sine alternating series, maybe with infinite radius of convergence, but sine alternating. So what?
We don't expect those singularities for real values of the couple.
Yes. So at least without any good reason. So that's just a result. And then, again, in their paper, what they pointed out that this series is not Borel summable. So if you try to Borel sum it, so what what that means is that you look at coefficients, how the coefficients grow. The coefficients grow factorially here, and I think they go, so this function expanded strong coupling goes as minus g, not sure about y minus, but minus is not relevant. So it's g times coefficients, you can approximate it by, in this way, gamma function k minus 1 half, 2 pi g in power k, and that is g times integral from 0 to 1, some variable, say x minus 1 half, e minus x. That's what you usually do when you try to Borel resum. Now, this sign is important, so it's a minus sign. I think it's the sign was inverted here somehow.
You're assuming this behavior, or are you?
No, you learn that. From
the coefficients.
You learn that the large k asymptotics is this.
Three coefficients, or you actually know the whole.
Yeah, the point was that this BS equation is known.
So you actually know.
You're just extracting from it the information, and the information is that high k behavior of these coefficients is this one. And then you try Borel sum, and if you had minus 1k in front, that will be plus sign here, and that will be Borel summable. But here there is a singularity on the real axis, and that means it's not Borel summable. That means you can try to sum it, and then there'll be ambiguity. So the claim is that the ambiguity is parameterized by,
or rather,
how they put it as, given the series, you should add here terms which go as with some coefficient A M cusp. And I'll define what M cusp is. Plus higher order terms in this M cusp. So these terms are non-perturbative. Look like non-perturbative terms. So M-cusp happens to be lambda 1/4 exponent minus lambda over 2.
What you said before, such terms can be there even when the series is Borel summable. Is that right or not? Because
these terms can be there if there is a reason for that. Yes. So it's like in QCD, where you would argue you have instantons, you have perturbative series.
Which is Borel summable.
Still,
you can have non-perturbative terms. So here,
if we are at the level of BES equation, you could, if you could sum this series from such a big coupling, you get some function. I don't know which function. Then you expand it at strong coupling. Mm-hmm. You would predict, assuming some prescription how you expand a strong coupling, you would get these terms plus these terms. You will get these expansion interactions if you just expand this.
So does the BES equation, does that uniquely fix these terms?
Solution,
once you get solution, it doesn't give, well, BES equation, the way how they treated it, gives you this series.
But the equation is non-perturbative, right? It's an exact
series. Yes, Yes.
So in principle, it must determine these terms.
Yes.
Right?
So solution of that equation, which is well defined at small lambda by,
yeah,
because it has finite rates of convergence, in principle determines the function, which you can expand then at strong coupling.
But has anyone yet calculated one of
No, I'm summarizing what is known. I'm summarizing what is known.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a very good question. So there are some, in principle, one could worry about different parts of this story. Where, what do we actually know? What we know, the way how I presented it, what we know is this BS equation, which is written in a certain way, and which is actually well defined, apparently, at small coupling. It's at least, at small coupling, it's truly a guess. It's supported by all existing evidence and based on the assumption of integrability to all others. Anyway, so that's the conclusion at the moment. That's what we see. We get non-barrel sample series. If we choose some prescription how to sum, then there's ambiguity. So there should be these terms as well. Now, what's the conclusion out of that? And the conclusion was quickly... Well, the interpretation was quickly suggested by Aldheim of the Senna. And the interpretation was, this looks exactly like mass gap in O6 model. So why don't we just say that this is this. So this mass, these non-perturbative terms which appear in this quantity is precisely this quantity, mass gap in O6 model. Of course, this doesn't sound like
naturally
obvious, but notice that this function actually has an interpretation from string theory side as some vacuum energy, because this log s happens to be related to the scale of the world sheet. And I can try to explain that why. So this is more like an energy of a string. This is like a effective length of a string. And this is the energy density from two-dimensional point of view. So if this is a two-dimensional energy, so then you can try drawing an analogy with the O6 model. But still, why? The O6 model is not conformally invariant. We're dealing with conformal theory here.
Well, you're dealing with gauge fixed string theory, which isn't conformal. Aldheim and Malvasina algorithm presumably was in some gauge, right?
No, Aldheim and Malvasina didn't do any calculations. They just suggested that interpretation. What they were talking about is somewhat different story, which I may mention.
The spinning string, and they found a particular.
Yes. So string theory in conformal gauge is conformally invariant theory. If you don't fix any Lycan gauge,
yeah,
you don't have a scale. You still have some constraints. You may think you need to impose, but you do have conformal invariance. Usual by conformal invariance, I mean conformal reparametrizations, which are left in conformal gauge.
If you do a consistent expansion, what they did was to look at the energy of a rotating string.
Yes, so I'm going to explain, to try to mention that. So that was the suggestion. The question is whether it's obvious and whether it's true and what's the meaning of all that. And if that's true, how general is that? Do we expect similar behavior for other anomalous dimensions? And indeed, the important point here that one shouldn't think of this being general story. What is done here is we consider a very special solution. It's a particular string configuration or a particular operator on gauge side. And that is more like doing some, in the context of field theory, you may also expand near different vacua. So in principle, you should worry about maybe what you're doing here is, in fact, this is the most obvious attempt of explanation, that we're somehow expanding near unstable configuration. Unstable, non-perturbably unstable, not perturbative is it's stable. I'm going, in fact, Valentina mentioned the spectrum already of this string, but I'll just say that again, how it looks like. That could be explanation if we knew why, is there some other solution which has lower energy or something like that, but it's not obvious that this is true. Now, why this relation to O6 model? Why it comes in? So the solution which we're discussing, the one which is, so what the logic is that you have this operator, And you can try to relate it to certain semi-classical string. For large spin, under certain assumptions, which are indeed important, what we're assuming here, we can take S very large. And we can take it as large as square root of lambda. And then we can try to relate it to string, folded string, which rotates in ABS with large spin. And its energy indeed goes the same way. It will go as this f of lambda log s. And we ignore her actions here, so we just concentrate on this leading term. So this solution, in fact, in that limit when log s is very large, if I call it kappa up to pi's, solution is very simple. So it actually, the ends of the solution go all the way to the boundary. It's stretched, infinitely stretched string. So it's global ADS time, so that's what I'm drawing here. It scales basically as kappa, which is log s. There is a radial direction of ADS, which goes linearly with sigma. So that's essentially the limit of this solution, which Valentina mentioned, which is elliptic Sn function. In the limit when this spin is infinite, it becomes essentially linear. So the string is just stretched in sigma. So if you formally treat sigma as running from 0 to 2 pi over 2, say, or kappa goes to infinity, it will mean rho goes all the way to infinity. And there is also an angle of rotation, which some angle which goes as tau, essentially. Again, something like kappa tau, or maybe just tau. Tau, kappa. So it's linear. It's a very simple solution. All coordinates are just linear in sigma or tau. For that reason, it's easy to compute quantum corrections, and it's easy to find what is fluctuation frequencies. So if you just consider this Green-Schwarz string in this background and compute fluctuations frequencies, you find masses of these fluctuations. And they go as follows. String is not stretched in S5, so it has just massless modes in S5. In ADS, you have two massless modes, which are canceled by ghosts. So it's essentially time-like direction and longitudinal direction, which are massless. Plus the three massive modes, so there will be one mode which has mass 4 in units of this kappa. Because I put kappa squared here. And there are two modes with mass 2 kappa squared. And the fermions happen to have mass, one in these units. So there are 8 fermions with mass kappa. So there's one single scale in this problem. So sigma is supposed to be originally periodic from 2 pi 0. So one single scale is kappa. It's the length of this. If we rescale sigma, if I introduce sort of sigma sum x, which is kappa sigma, that x will be running from 0 to infinity, and that will be infinite line. Or minus pi pi, then it will be minus infinity infinity. But anyway, so we essentially decompactify our cylinder in this limit when we take kappa to infinity. What we're trying to compute is vacuum energy, which will be essentially two-dimensional vacuum energy will be something proportional to kappa, and that will determine the length. Kappa is the length, so that will be determining the Kasparov. So the problem is essentially the same as computing effective action of quantum electrodynamics in constant field strength background. The only difference is that, well, there's no difference actually. So this kappa plays the role of the volume. We don't really have any other parameter. We just have coupling constant. So the logic of Aldeyev Dasena, which was actually in slightly more general context when they had also charge in S5 switched on, a small charge. I don't think I want really to go into that story. So if we consider more general operator, which is trace Z in some power J, V plus something like that. We puzzle that order in different ways. So this J can be also semi-classical, so it can be a word of sort of lambda. And then we can consider the ratio of J over log S. And we can consider generalization of this cusp anomaly function, which will also depend on lambda and J. And what we'll be computing is anomalous dimension, or E, which is proportional to log S for fixed J. So J is fixed and log S is taken to infinity. And then there's a story about the dependence on J, which is indeed, according to Aldai and Maldacena suggestion, should be controlled by L6 model. So this f of lambda, this function can be split into something which goes as this, and this epsilon will be proportional to J. Depending on which limit, it can start with J squared or J. And so the suggestion of Aldai and Maldacena was that this part is controlled by L6 model. Why? If you look at this spectrum, you have five massless modes. Oh, well, five massless modes. So these modes are canceled by ghosts. We don't worry about them. And we have these massive modes. So if we assume in our mind that we integrated all these massive modes, keeping, so this is in the case of J equals zero. But if you switch on J a little bit, then there'll be some light modes here and small corrections to these ones, which we can take into account by integrating these massive modes. So then there'll be some effective action for this J dependence, and it will be essentially controlled by these massless modes. That's the idea. So we have a theory of heavy particles and light particles, and heavy particles provide ultraviolet cutoff. So you have O6 model embedded, made ultraviolet complete by embedding it into this conformity theory, which is string theory. And you are interested in some effective action for these light modes, and that's this part. And this is the part which is controlled by O6 model, at least part of it. The one which, where you can really ignore massive modes, and that's the part which is over the J squared if J is fixed, or if J is J over M is fixed. Then a slightly different behavior, and that's controlled by, again, by L6 model. The whole series is, in that case, is controlled by L6 model. Anyway, that's I'm going sideways now, but let me get back to the story. So there is a story about this function.
And indeed, it's controlled by L6 model.
The question we want to go back to, what about this function? If we take J to 0, that's the story. These modes interact, but honestly speaking, we can't really tell that f of lambda in no way is controlled just by massless modes. It doesn't make any sense. It's controlled by all system. So why this cusp, this non-perturbative part of this function is actually exactly equivalent to O6 mass gap. Strangely enough, there is a strong claim, again, in a recent paper by Basser and Karchemsky, that these two functions are actually the same. And I'll just conclude with a few comments why this story is rather mysterious still. So it may well be true that this is, even in this J equals zero limit, these non-perturbative
directions are indeed coming out of sigma
or six sigma model. But there are a few
cautionary remarks.
So first remark is that if you look at these coefficients, this series expansion. So the reason for these terms was this minus signs. And if I restore, so if I remind you that G is square root of lambda, you may worry that if we just take square root of lambda to minus square root of lambda, formally, these signs become sign alternating, and this series will become Borel summable. And then the story changes rather dramatically. So, but this doesn't make sense, because then sigma model becomes unstable. And that somehow reminds this Dyson argument, changing the coefficient in front of the action. But then you can ask yourself, okay, if I start from gauge theory side, how do I know what's the sign of square root of lambda? So gauge theory does not know the amount of sine of because as I mentioned at the beginning, gauge theory expansion is an expansion power of lambda, lambda squared, lambda cubed, etc. Even powers of lambda. All anomalous dimensions are perfect functions of even powers of lambda. You sum them, you get some definite functions. So what can happen is that these functions are really bad at large lambda, and then you will need to decide which sign you choose. And then you need to match on string side, string expression, which would be at least leading term here. So that's, I'm just raising this as food for thought. I don't have any clear suggestion. Secondly, if we look really what is going on here, so these three coefficients we know from string theory. We actually computed them, C1 and C2. And C1, as I mentioned, is something like 3 log 2. And C2 is this Catalan number up to some coefficient. But this Catalan number is actually containing contribution of boson, fermion. It's 2 log string diagrams. So you may ask yourself, what if I switch off fermions? What happens with the C2? And the answer is that without fermions, it changes sign. And that's very mysterious. So it looks like fermions actually make this sign from plus to minus. Again, that sounds very bizarre, because you are trying to claim that this whole story has to do with our 6 model, where there are no fermions at all. So it should be kind of universal, whatever UV completion you're doing, it shouldn't matter. But here, this theory is made conformally there because of fermions. And yet, they kind of go the other way compared to our 6 model. So again, that sounds like we don't really understand the proof behind that story. So I think it remains a challenge to understand, first, the meaning of these non-perturbative corrections. Secondly, how universal they are. And let me stress again that the whole story applies to that particular setup. So it's just like choosing some vacuum background near which you're expanding. If you don't do that, you can get something else in principle. And the example of something else would maybe, say, this Kanishi operator, which I plan to discuss a little bit, but I think I don't have that no time to do that, where you get a weak coupling similar series, but whether you should really expect to get some sign alternating series at strong coupling, we don't know. We may know soon, maybe in half a year or less, given that now there is a conjecture about how to compute anomalous dimensions of short operators, and what one needs to do is to learn how to extract, to do something which was done by Basil, Kaczynski, Katansky, how to extract from this Y system now, or TBA, so once we do that, and what we're trying to do is to see what is on string side, what we get on string side for this subleading coefficient for, say, Kanishi operator, to be able to check whatever prediction may come out of this story, we still need to check it against string theory, otherwise we don't really trust that. Anyway, so that, thank you for your attention. I just wanted to bring this up because I don't think this is a clear resolution of this puzzle yet. Okay.
Can I make a comment? What's striking is the fact that, from this LVM model's argument, is that the string, the effective action for the fluctuations around this particular string solution, strongly coupled in the infrared, no matter how large lambda is. naively one might have thought that if you take lambda very, very large, then uniformly you could do semi-classical string theory, you know, for any configuration. But what this is saying is that if you look at this particular folded string, some of the modes are soft and they have relevant interactions which become strong in the infrared, and then that opens the door to all these non-perturbative effects that we're seeing. And somehow, that seems to remove most of the if that's right, that removes most of the paradox in that once you agree that this is not semi-classical, then you allow the fact that you can have, you know, such corrections that look a bit like fractional instantons rather than normal ones.
I tend to agree. So these light modes are important, but the question is how important and how can you quantitate that?
Well, they could produce these exponentially small terms, and it seems to be a different issue, the issue of the signs in this series. I'm not sure whether that's directly related.
Exactly, that is exactly the point. So you could have Borel summable part here, and your argument could tell me that, yes, there is extra non-perturbative correction.
Yeah, the O6 sigma model is Borel summable, presumably.
Yes.
And it has these
yes.
terms.
Yes, that's what I was thinking at when I was saying that.
Issues, right?
Yes. So, well, yes and no. At least the previous authors didn't make that distinction. Maybe, yes. So what I was indeed trying to say that if you switch off fermions, take O6 model, embed it into something which makes it ultraviolet finite. And we can even try to invent some, I don't know, supersymmetric sigma model, Rothschild supersymmetric sigma model. I'm not sure we can make it completely ultraviolet finite, but maybe one loop finite. Well, not one loop finite, actually. Yeah, for O6 model, I don't know how to do that. But some ultraviolet completion. The question would be, yes, you're right.
There are these terms, but
what about this story? How much each of these stories are correlated, and how much they are related to particular ultraviolet embedding?
Seem to be anti-correlated, if anything, given your comment.
No, I think I like your point that they are not may not be correlated at all. Yes, but at least in the previous papers on that subject, they were correlated. And then, if that's true, then what you should watch for other states, if you do have massless modes, you may start worrying. If you have free massless modes, but I think I have problems with that argument. Say, if you have some solution which sits in part of S5, and you still have some massless modes left, maybe, should you really care about their dynamics? They may not have any global symmetry acting on them, et cetera, et cetera. So, I would be a little bit cautious jumping to conclusions if you just see some massless mode somewhere.
Well, it's important that you know
there should be symmetry.
Massive modes, you will get reduced this.
So this mass gap is, for example, mass gap is related to asymptotic freedom. Mm-hmm. For example, if this mode sits somewhere else and there's no real dynamics which controls just their interactions, then it'll be a completely different story.
Yeah, mass gap.
Yes, mass gap, yeah.
The induced scale has to be much smaller than the cutoff to make the argument clear, right? And that's somehow what happens here.
Returning to this question about the phase, there we deal with massive BMN mode scattering, and there is no massless mode left, so maybe even if you can control this S matrix non-perturbatively, there shouldn't be any similar corrections there.
Version of this
and other like ABS 3.3
or something.
There are
computations in the whole partition function
string,
right?
We
talk about this
now. There, I'm talking about Green-Schwarz Ramon-Ramon background. Yeah, for NS, it's a different story. It would be a different story, very much different story, because you have BMNU field there and.
We still have the ON part.
It's a different ON part. It's a Vesemino part. It's a Vesemino Witten.
Vesemino-Witten
is a completely different story. I think their dynamics is very different compared to the ON model.
Flow can be stopped at the bosonic level.
Yes, it's kind of, there's no, there you don't have that split at all. Here fermions make the whole thing coupled and conformal. There you have conformal blocks sort of out of bosonic parts.
in quantum field theory, perturbation theory is in general asymptotic. It doesn't converge, and so it doesn't capture the number of effects. But I guess, now this is funny, because I'm not sure that necessarily tells you anything about the sign. I mean, with SNS theory, we often picture them sort of going positive, negative, and alternating around the
Yes, but,
but there's no reason it has to be true, as far as I can tell. I mean,
if the coefficients grow factorially, and if you don't have alternating signs,
yes, then
you don't have Borel summability.
Right, but that Borel summability is something more special than just having an asymptotic expansion. I guess would I care if quantum field theory were not Borel summable? I mean,
Then you don't know what is defined by a perturbative series.
Well, but no, it's not defined. I never believed it was defined by I never believed it anyway, right? I mean, I always believed it was defined by the path integral. So, I guess the point is that there are
cases. We don't do it as far from what I know from literature. In all cases where you expand near a stable vacuum, you have sign alternating.
I assumed that, but I don't know why it's true. I mean, I guess the anti-Mach oscillator is true. I guess Borel summability works. Is that true? And so there you have it. Yeah. But I mean, as far as I know, it's never actually been used in quantum field theory, right? It's been talked about a lot.
You mean strictly speaking as alternating or approximately alternating or asymptotically alternating?
Well, that's probably asymptotic alternating, right? I mean, you can always find it.
Here they are alternating.
Right.
The remarkable story here is that we do know the perturbative series.
Right.
First time in 4-dimensional quantum field theory. We know, at least, so far we don't know the function, but at least we know many, many orders of.
You know, because it was derived again.
Sorry?
It was derived, or?
What?
Derived this function was derived?
There is very strong evidence, conjecture for asymptotic beta lambda for anomalous dimensions in ankle 4 theory. From there, you derive the rest.
Well, the phase is not proven.
Okay, we discussed that already. The phase is constructed based on some perturbative evidence plus assumption of integrability. It's not proved by making some assumption about certain symmetry and then deriving it, yes.
But even with assumption of integrability, you need also
If it was sufficiently perverse, you could cook up a CDD factor or something for the S matrix that would disappear fast enough that both would have strong coupling and not spoil the singularity structure in an unacceptable way. So
is that true?
I'm sure you could, yes, why not? There are loads of homogeneous solutions to the crossing equation, right? You just multiply those and look for suitable things that are suppressed at both weak and strong coupling. So you evade any. I'm sure something like that's possible.
No, what is needed is Lorentz invariant formulation, this thing. Because the whole problem here is that you're dealing with function of three variables, two momenta and one couple. And previous discussions in similar integral systems were always for function of two arguments. So I think it may be the current stage of the subject rather than.
Well, obviously the current stage of the subject.
I think what we really need is a regulator for the world sheet theory that preserves integrability. So you have a rigorous formulation for what the sigma model means. And that's present with a lot of other integrable models like Sine-Gordon, whatever, and that's, at the end of the day, what settles all these
kinds of questions. You mean some kind of lattice formulation?
Yeah, sure. So any discretized formulation which does not upset integrability.
Yeah.